Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Cholera in Haiti this week, Iranian money in Kabul, tsunami and volcano in Indonesia, and in the USA, midterm politics all over. The president took his case to The Daily Show with Jon Stewart.
When we promised during the campaign, change you can believe in,
right?
It wasn't change you can believe in 18 months. It was
right.
Change you can believe in, but you know what? We're going to have to work for it.
John Boehner took his case to Sean Hannity. He may be soon Republican Speaker of the House.
This is not time for compromise. And I can tell you, Sean, that we will not compromise on our principles and we will not compromise on the will of the American people.
Only Mother Nature was louder than the politics. A monster storm system roared over the Midwest.
We heard something popping and banging, and that was the roof being ripped off.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable with Candy Crowley of CNN, Janet Hook of The Wall Street Journal, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join the conversation. What's your midterm forecast, your final week campaign story? What's at stake on Tuesday? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Janet, Candy, Jack, it's great to have you all with us. Candy, let me come first to you. What's the big picture? What do the numbers say? House side, Senate side? What's possible? What's likely on Tuesday, Candy?
Well, I honestly don't think the dynamic has changed that much in the past couple of months. I think you're looking for considerable Republican pickup in the House. More than likely, I mean, the odds all point to a Republican takeover in the House. I think you're looking at a close Senate. Someone forced me to predict, and I said, 49-49 maybe, on the Senate side. And really importantly, the governorships. There are a lot of them up this year, and Republicans also look to do some pickups there.
Janet, you've been looking at how Democrats in the House will respond. If it's a Republican majority there, a lot of jockeying going on already for House posts on both parties on the other side. What do you see coming?
Well, the biggest question for Democrats is if they're in the minority, what happens to their leadership? Does Nancy Pelosi stay around? She'll not be Speaker if they don't have the majority. What happens? Is there any instinct for a big house cleaning? I actually think that there isn't that much of a push to change the leaders, even if they lose. On the Republican side, there's all kinds of new opportunities. The Republicans take over all the committee chairmanships, as well as John Boehner will become Speaker. There doesn't seem to be any likely challenge to him. And I do think that they have a real interest in minimizing intra-party conflict over it, because with so much on their plate as they take over the majority, the last thing Republicans want to do is have a lot of leadership bloodletting.
We heard that no compromise line from John Boehner right there. Jack Beatty, what do you see on this horizon? I mean, there's so much talk about Republicans coming in big. Voters may see, well, it's all said and done. But, of course, it's many, many votes across this country, not just one. It's every vote in the midterms elections.
That's true, and there may be subterranean currents, but it doesn't look as if they're well, of course, they're subterranean. You can't see them, but, you can see the potential when you look at the gap between likely voters and registered voters. For example, in Nevada and Pennsylvania, the Democrats have a 4-point deficit when you look at likely voters. But if you look at registered voters, it goes to a 4-point advantage. But that tells the tale that we've been talking about all season long. Republican voters are much more likely to show up, and that's inexorable. Nothing has changed that. And, I don't think really the Democrats or the president can be fairly blamed for the condition of the economy. They are in power, though, and it is the tradition of economic retrospective voting that voters vote on the economy. But it's clear that the Democrats have failed politically to fire up their base.
Candy, what about big names that may go away in this race? Senator Feingold in Wisconsin fighting hard for that position, but who knows?
Feingold, Johnson, that race is pretty amazing in Wisconsin. And yes, the numbers now point to a Republican pickup there. I think it doesn't get any more marquee than the race in Nevada between Harry Reid, the top Democrat in the Senate, and Sharon Engel, a Tea Party activist-backed candidate. But I think you also have to look at West Virginia, where the seat that was held by the late Robert Byrd for more than 50 years could get picked up by a Republican against a very popular Democratic governor. I mean, really depends on the size of the wave. So there are a lot of very interesting big name, at least in Washington terms, big name races going on out there where we could see also in Congress we could see some big names fall. Everybody's talking about Barney Frank's race in Massachusetts. I think he survives, but it's going to be closer than he would like it to be, I think. And out in Missouri, you have Ike Skelton, another one of the kind of the old Democratic bulls who seems to be in some trouble. It just, what we don't know, what we haven't been able to determine, it goes back to that enthusiasm gap, that likely versus registered, is how big a wave of this is going to be, because a big wave takes out some real familiar names.
Let's get right into the thick of it. There's a lot in the news today about Bill Clinton and the Senate race in Florida. Candy Crowley, you were there on Sunday night co-moderating a debate among the candidates. Pretty contentious, occasionally got right down into bickering when the possible extension of the Bush tax cuts was being discussed. You asked the candidates, Candy, if part of the problem was an unwillingness to compromise in Washington. Let's listen. Marco Rubio responded first, the Republican candidate. Then Charlie Crist gets right in there, the independent, and Kendrick Meek both jumping in. Let's listen.
I don't think the White House is just stubborn. So do other Democrats who have now signed on. You have five Senate Democrats saying we've got to vote on this thing and extend, and make sure that the taxes are extended for everybody. It's not me just saying
this.
There are a number of Democrats.
Adam, let me just say this. Let me just say this.
Years of this kind of bickering back and forth, not being able to figure out what to do, ideological arguments without common sense, you know, compromising to do what's right for the people. You're seeing it right here, right now. That's why I'm running as an independent, is to give the people of Florida.
You know, since, let me just say this. All right, we know why the governor's running as an independent, because he couldn't beat Marco Rubio, okay? Let's just wait. Let's just put it that way. No, that's okay. No.
You heard Rubio, and then Chris, pretty much, and then Kendrick Meek at the end, sort of telling it like it is. But, Candy, the story that's emerged now, I don't know if it's true or not. Meek denying it in the latest thing I've seen, but that Bill Clinton has been down there trying to get it, was trying to get him to drop out of the race, let the independent, Chris, have it.
They are, yes, and as far as we can tell, and certainly it's been confirmed to CNN and several of my colleagues and several of us, that Bill Clinton did approach Meek, having heard that others had asked Meek, the Democrat in the race, to get out, because Meek and Charlie Crist, the Republican-turned-independent governor, are pulling votes away from each other. So they're splitting up the independents that are voting Democratic as well as the Democratic vote. And that's making it so that Marco Rubio, who is also backed by Tea Party activists, is right now well outside the margin of error and looks to be like the next senator from Florida. But I have to tell you, in that the dynamic in that debate that we did, there wasn't a lot of love lost at that table.
I
know that the Meek people were, prior to this, quite offended by suggestions that he should be the one to drop out of the race. They said, look, he's the Democratic nominee. Charlie Crist is the guy that never won a primary. So they had their backs up about this even prior to this story coming out, and I don't imagine they're real thrilled it's come out now.
Janet Hook, you've been talking with Chris Van Hollen. He's chairman of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. Republicans are feeling pretty good here. How's he fighting at this point? Where's he looking to, you know, to hold the line, and how?
Well, it really is a job of just cutting the party's losses for Chris Van Hollen. He knew when the election cycle began, actually, that the political landscape was a tough one for Democrats. Even before the climate turned so sour, right after the election, he could look at the map. Anybody could look at the map and see that the Democratic caucus was filled with a lot of Democrats who won very narrowly in very Republican districts. So even if the unemployment rate were 4% right now, those would be tough seats to hold on to. So between that kind of map, so many, like I think there were about 80 Democrats in the House who were in districts that usually vote Republican, So from the get-go, it looked like a job of holding losses. Then the economy is just not rebounding. The GDP numbers that came out today didn't help. And so for Chris Van Hollen right now and the party as a whole, it's a matter of kind of political triage, figure out what races you can help by contributing more money, time, campaigning from national leaders, and which ones you just kind of have to cut the cord.
Jack, do you see a message this late in the game in this many races that the Democrats are mounting, you know, fresh in the last days of the midterm season? Is there a new message that works here, or is it just all about those brutal economic numbers?
I think it's about the numbers and the mood. Peter Hart puts it this way, the pollster. He said, the mood is a combination of frustration and fear and desperation and down.
Jeez.
That's as bad as it gets for an incumbent party. But you know, I think there's a very good piece in today's Wall Street Journal that I commend to every listener by Jerry Seib, who puts together a number of things and has a sort of master theory of the case. And the theory is that neither party knows how to deal with success. That is, they don't know how to deal with independent swing voters who go to them. In 2008, by 8 points, they went to the Democrats. The Democrats overplayed their hand and lost the independents. Now, by 20 points, they're going to the Republicans. And the chances are the Republicans who don't want to compromise, 70% of independents want them to, they could lose the independents.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news. Final push for the midterms. Harry Reid in trouble. Bill Clinton weighs in. Murkowski fights on in Alaska. The big vote, of course, on Tuesday. Janet Hook is with us from the Wall Street Journal. Candy Crowley from CNN. And our own Jack Beatty. And let's go to our listeners. Betsy in Brewster, Massachusetts. Betsy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I am one of those Democrats who is stumping and maybe stomping. And I have to say that listening to you all makes my blood pressure rise.
Tell us.
Because I hear you saying that the Democrats are not going to go out to vote, and I'm afraid that that's going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy. All of the people I talk to are absolutely committed to going to the polls and making sure that the wave does not happen. And I am really discouraged to hear the media, including NPR, saying that we don't care and that we're not going out there.
Let's be plain on this front. We encourage everybody to vote. But I have wondered, and let us pick it up, Betsy. I appreciate your call. I mean, Candy, I wonder if all the talk of here it comes, the wave, may wake what was a sleeping Democratic base here to vote or not.
Well, that certainly has been for the past couple of weeks, people have said, and certainly the White House and the Democrats are hoping. Because they're, you know, the president's been out there saying, listen to me, it's really important you get out there. They say all the passion is on the Tea Party side, but we have the passion, we have to complete our work. I mean, that's what it's been all about. It has not been about substance for the past couple of weeks. It's been about driving Democrats to the polls. And certainly we have begun to see the polls closing in the likely voter model. When you ask, we've begun to see Democrats come home. We've begun to see Democrats saying yes, you know, sort of going over into the likely Democratic voter mode. The question is it enough to fill the gaps we see around the country? And it just doesn't appear to be.
In California, maybe some movement on that front. I mean, Meg Whitman and Carly Fiorina not looking as handsome in the polls as they might have once. Little tape here of an interesting back and forth with Jerry Brown, the Democratic gubernatorial candidate, and Meg Whitman sharing the stage. Maria Shriver had organized a get-together out there. Moderator Matt Lauer asked both candidates if they would agree to stop airing negative ads. Lots of those across the country right now. Both of these candidates hedged. Here's Democratic candidate Jerry Brown's response.
First of all, you have to remember, sometimes negativity is in the eye of the beholder. So assuming we can agree...
Governor Brown,
wait a minute. Assuming
if it
we can agree
like
on
negativity, it's negativity.
Well, there's a spectrum.
And here's Meg Whitman, Republican candidate who has spent a boatload. Of course, she was CEO of eBay. Also hedged when Matt Lauer asked if she would stop airing negative ads about her opponent.
So here's what I'll do. I will take down any ads that could even be remotely be construed as a personal attack. But I don't think we can take down the ads that talk about where Governor Brown stands on the issues. I just think it's not the right thing to do.
Janet Hook, what do you make of the California scene? Polls, I think, with Jerry Brown looking in better position right now, and Barbara Boxer as well. What's happened with the big, you know, corporate powerhouses there, Whitman and Fiorina?
Well, it's really interesting because elections are supposedly about the future, and a lot of people look at Jerry Brown and think of him as a throwback because he's been governor a long time ago.
Right.
The electorate in California is very volatile. That race has kind of tightened and then widened and tightened a couple times. So at this point, I actually think it was very interesting that it took that much effort to get them together on the stage to address the negative ad question. I do think, though, that asking candidates anywhere, especially in California, where so much campaigning is done via television advertisement, to suspend negative ads, I mean, it's like asking for unilateral disarmament. And right. It's become a very prominent feature everywhere across the country. And if there's anything that's unusual, though, about it, I think, is that that it started quite early. Typically, the really ugly negative ads come very late in the campaign. But I think we saw a lot of really negative stuff coming, especially from, it's from both parties. As early as Labor Day, which it's made for a very ugly season, I think.
We'll look at the funding behind that, the push behind that. But Candy, first, the same question to you on California. What do you read going on here? These were such high-profile candidacies. It's not over yet. Carly Fiorina, with her, post-operative surgical infection this week, took her off the campaign trail from her breast cancer for a couple of days. That's the hard stuff. But what do you read in the Boxer and Brown apparent comebacks? We'll see on Tuesday. What do you think, Candy?
Well, listen, I mean, setting aside Arnold Schwarzenegger, who is a Republican in name, but generally certainly trends toward Democratic positions on a lot of issues, particularly social issues, California is a Democratic state. And if you were looking at a blowout by either Carly Fiorina or Meg Whitman, the two Republican women for senator and governor, to me, it would speak, you know, gloom and doom, like right now for the Democrats. I think, you know, neither Fiorina or Meg Whitman have run very good races. I mean, it does matter. This is not a gimme for Republicans because people aren't out there going, I really want the Republicans in charge. People are out there going, I want some brakes put on what's going on in Washington. It is not a pro-Republican vote from anything that we can see. And so if you are a Republican running a bad race, and I think you could argue Meg Whitman's had some problems with a housekeeper and her documentation.
Who
and,
she says now should be deported now. That.
Right. I mean, that, you know, so those sorts of things have come up. So if you run a bad race, you're going to lose. And I don't think either one of the Republican races out there have been particularly good races.
Let's go to Kevin in East Hartford, Connecticut. Kevin, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you today?
Okay, what do you see?
All right. Now, I think the Republicans are going to win some seats, but I think this massive blowout that everybody's talking about, it depends who you talk to. The Tea Party is out there making a lot of noise right now. And I think they're going to underestimate the Democrats' ability and will to not go back to the policies of that failed us prior to. I think they're underestimating the Democrats' desire to really have some sort of health care and some regulation on the insurance industry and the healthcare industry. So I think they, you know, Boxer, she might be in trouble, but I think she might win by the skin of her teeth. And I think it'll be a wake-up call for the Democrats. And I think talking about putting the brakes on stuff, the people that are out there doing the barking are not representing the entire American body of people. So this is what I think. You're taking a select few that really are upset about a few things, okay? Mainly Republicans and some independents. You don't find a whole heap of Democrats. And I think they're doing a good job trying to get the vote out. That's where it's going to count for us.
Kevin, we hear it. Let me take it to you, Jack. Do you see the wake-up call for Democrats, if there is one here, you know, now or the day after this election?
I guess the experts think it's going to come too late. Why are the Democrats lagging? Why is this gap between, registered and likely voters? What's the reason for it? I mean, well, let's speculate. Suppose, is it a matter of liberal defection? I mean, if the health care bill had had the public option, would that have made a difference? We don't know. Is it that the Democrats haven't been able to do what they did in 1998 and demonize and give a face to the Republican opposition? No one knows who John Boehner is. Everyone knew who Newt Gingrich was then. Is it that the president has simply not communicated effectively to help his party? For example, a poll showed recently that something like only 10% of Americans know that the president cut the taxes for everybody, and especially for people in the middle, by $800 a couple last year. No one knows about it. And part of the reason is the way they designed it. It was designed not to come as a lump sum or something you deduct at the end of the year, but it comes in paycheck after paycheck, a little bit off. And that was designed as, that's good public policy. Maybe. But imagine going to Lyndon Johnson and saying, Mr. President, let's do good public policy.
Secretly.
And secretly.
He'd say, forget it, or at least put a big sticker on those paychecks. Melvin,
absolutely.
Birmingham, Alabama. Melvin, you're on the air. Melvin.
Yes, I just wanted to say, there was a lady calling there a little while ago. They was talking about how they don't believe that the Democrats are going to turn out. Well, I made up my mind a long time ago. I don't listen to all the rhetoric out there. I guess the Democrats, they're just not as forceful as the Republicans are as putting rhetoric out there. I just don't believe it. Regardless of what the other side says, I'm voting Democrat.
Melvin's headed out to the polls, and we appreciate your call, Melvin. I mean, maybe something will happen here, maybe not. We've got lots of web comments. Here's one from Dee, Janet. She says, I was a hope and change voter in 08. Now I'm a third-party voter, since those parties seem to be the only ones not bought and paid for by our corporate masters. I want to ask you and Candy. I mean, you watch this very closely. People are thinking right now there's a lot of Tea Party support out there, but also Tea Party candidates doing some stumbling here. Janet, if we get a significant Tea Party presence in Congress as part of a Republican majority, is that just a same old Republican majority, or is that something new? Is a Tea Party vote a Republican vote or not? How do you see it?
Well, I think the Tea Party sentiment is being expressed through Republican candidates, and I do think that they will be moved to bring a different spirit to the Congress, especially in the Senate, which is a really sort of staid, tradition-bound institution where there's a lot of deference and to seniority and that sort of thing. And I think that if you have a larger faction of Republican senators in the style of Jim DeMint, who's sort of the hero of the Tea Party wing of the party, if you have a Sharon Engel or a Ken Buck or some of these very strong Republican candidates who may yet show up, I think it'll bring a little bit more, it'll kind of destabilize not just the Senate as a whole, but especially the Republican caucus, because, Mitch McConnell is a traditional Republican leader who has to figure out how to sort of ride the tiger of this sort of anti-establishment sentiment they represent. And in the House, I think you already see signs of the Republican leadership trying to kind of tailor their agenda and their style to the Tea Party candidates, which is that they're already promising, just because government spending is such a big issue out there, especially for Tea Party candidates, they're talking about having a vote every week on cutting spending somewhere.
Yeah.
So I think they'll make a big difference.
Candy, let me put that to you in the context of the Alaska race. I mean, it's really interesting where you've got Lisa Murkowski now, coming back as a write-in vote against the Tea Party favorite Republican primary winner, Joe Miller, who's got Sarah Palin behind him. Here's Murkowski talking about her write-in candidacy, which is gaining some momentum.
We've been doing things the good old-fashioned way, which is ensuring that people know how to move forward with a write-in campaign. We're giving people wristbands that say, this is how you spell it. We've got jingles that remind people, this is how you spell it. Fill it in, write it in.
This is how you spell it. Candy, I mean, there you've got the sitting Republican Senator, Lisa Murkowski. She's up against the Palin Tea Party-backed Joe Miller. Joe's having some trouble right now, but there's if it's a nuance, there's a nuance right there. She's fighting write-in style to get it. What about the Alaska race, and what about the bigger picture? If you get Tea Party victories, is it just a Republican victory by another name or not, Candy?
Well, certainly. Look, these Tea Party candidates are running as Republicans. So, they're running under the banner of Republicans.
Yep.
They will caucus with the Republicans, but they're going to give the Republicans some trouble, that's for sure. What we don't know, we know that the Tea Party strength was quite evident during the primaries. It threw out Mike Castle in Delaware for Christine O'Donnell. It happened in Kentucky. It happened in Nevada. It happened in Alaska. Alaska is the only place where you see the Republican Lisa Murkowski fighting back, looking to be the first successful write-in Senate candidate since Strom Thurmond. So there's a history there that runs against her. So I don't think we know the real strength of the Tea Party candidates at this point, and whether the Tea Party is organized enough in any place, because the Tea Party's not like a thing. It's a lot of things. You know, it's a lot of different people who say, oh, yeah, I'm a Tea Party activist, and it could be one person, it could be 50. There is not an overall umbrella group that makes it cohesive. So we don't know whether or not, in a general election, the Tea Party has got the power to pull people over the line.
Candy, you say it's a lot of things, and so do, you know, Tea Party people. They say it's a lot of things. You've got a lot of experience here. Do you buy that, or is it a Dick Armey, you know, subterranean Republican thing just behind the curtain, or not?
Oh, I think it's by and large a part of the Republican Party. You know, the Tea Party is a movement. It's not really a party. Mm-hmm. And it is a conservative movement within the Republican Party. I mean, they ran, you know, many of these are people who were registered Republicans. Yes, some of them have come from the outside and are new to politics. Washington Post did a fascinating story on, you know, who the Tea Party people are. But by and large, this is not an independent movement. It's not a Ross Perot kind of thing. It is by and large, these are Republicans.
Here's a comment online from Sam. Says, the underlying disquiet in the land arises from a desire for significant change that moves the nation into a new era beyond failing economic, you know, this failing economic game and exploitation of the money changers, he writes, that are behind the scenes pulling the strings and playing the tune of the Tea Party dance. He doesn't want more of that, but then others are looking to that for something new. Statesboro, Georgia, Stephen, you're on the air.
Yeah, how are you? My question is, with the redistricting every decade with the governors, in the state of Georgia, it is Sonny Perdue is currently the Republican governor. We have a race now with Roy Barnes, who is an old Democratic governor of mm-hmm. Georgia, and with Nathan Deal.
Okay.
With the Republican elected, if elected this year, does that mean that the districts will be redone as they were 10 years ago, or how does that work?
Yeah, Janet, how about it? If you've got victories in those state houses, what does it mean for upcoming elections, the way things get redistricted?
Well, yes, it's the state houses in all 50 states that are going to be deciding how congressional districts look for the next decade. I doubt they'll go back in Georgia to exactly the way it was 10 years ago, because the redistricting reflects both population and political shifts. But nothing's more important than which party controls the state house. And at this point, the art and science of redistricting is so precise that the districts tend to be drawn along very partisan lines to preserve the power of an incumbent or of the controlling party.
It's about future congressional races. Then what about the 2012 presidency, that race? Does districting come into play there, or is that really just a congressional issue?
It's really just a congressional issue.
Candy, what about the setup for 2012 here? I mean, you know, some people say a Republican majority is good for the president. Others say bad. How do you see it?
Well, I think if you think it depends on what you think the president's problem is right now. The White House thinks the president's problem has been that people don't understand the full breadth of what's happened, and that things haven't had time to kick in so far as the stimulus is concerned, or even health care. So, you know, if you believe that, then 2 years is going to see him in good stead. The problem I think that some people see for the president is that he's perceived as being too left of center. We go back to Bill Clinton in 1994.
Candy, hold the thought. There may be a change in that. We'll come back and look at it. This is On Point. In other news this week, cholera spreads quickly in Haiti. One woman spoke about how the disease hit her family.
I actually lost a sister in it Friday. With my sister, the same day that she got it, she died.
A tsunami in Indonesia kills more than 400 and displaces thousands. Here's the Indonesian president.
As a leader, I am so sad to see so many lives lost in this calamity.
And Stephen Colbert got into the Halloween spirit to hype his rally with Jon Stewart on the National Mall this weekend.
Now, don't forget, you're going to need a costume for my rally this Saturday on the Washington Mall. As always.
We're looking at a week in the news, midterm politics all over with Candy Crowley, chief political correspondent at CNN, host of CNN's State of the Union, Janet Hook, political reporter for The Wall Street Journal, and our own Jack Beatty. And Candy, you were talking about, what you're expecting here, looking at forward to 2012 and the outcome in these races.
Well, if the president has a Republican-controlled House to deal with and a less of a strength of Democrats mm-hmm. on the Senate side. In other words, more Republicans, but they're not in the majority.
Right.
To get anything done, it's going to require everybody to sort of give up something. That necessarily moves everybody more toward the center. So if you think the president's problem is that he hasn't kind of governed from the center, this could help him in the same way it did Bill Clinton in 1994. It also, I should add, gives him someone to play against, as in, well, I would have had this, but the Republican-controlled House wouldn't give it to me. That always works well on the campaign trail, so there are ways it could work for him.
Of course, this time out, a lot of his base is already complaining about how near the center he was. I guess that was there with Clinton, too. Paducah, Kentucky. Tom, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Tom. What do you see?
I see a zeitgeist. That's a German term for spirit of the times.
Yeah.
The spirit of the times rode our president into office, and I see the spirit of the times has changed now for four or five reasons. The zeitgeist now is riding the wave for the Tea Party people. You know, there's four or five good reasons why. The wave will reverse because those people who rode the initial zeitgeist in wanted sexual revolution. They wanted free mortgage or less mortgage. They wanted they wanted a job, and they were promised all these things. They were promised that they would get the tides would rise. We'll be a leader in the world. All these things, and I don't think many of those people have seen what they wanted to see, and so they're a little disappointed. I think many of the people who were eager to vote before, they've been disappointed, and I don't see them returning back to the polls.
Tom, and everybody campaigns for homes and jobs, I guess. I don't remember people campaigning for sexual revolution, but you're calling from Kentucky. May I ask you about this incident this week where the Rand Paul campaign coordinator for one of your counties there, and we see the video, apparently stomped on the head of this MoveOn.org worker, stepped on it at the least, after she was, tussled to the ground by Paul people as he was arriving at the debate on Monday night. What do you make of that, Tom? What did you see in that video, in that incident?
Well, it sounds to me like you saw only one part of the video. If you saw the entire video, you would have seen the lady in her wig coming up to one side of Rand Paul's car, forcing through the crowd to get to when he was getting out, pushing people to get to him to show him the sign she was. And then he went out, he got off the other side of the car. She went over there, was pushing again, and the guy pulled her to the ground.
But let me ask you, let's say she was pushing forward to show him a sign, should she have her head laid on the curb and then stepped on?
Shoulder, and I mean, that's not right. And Rand Paul said it wasn't right,
right,
and he fired the guy,
yep,
and he got rid of him. He put it, that is not part of his, and I'm not necessarily a Rand Paul supporter, but you're only looking at the last 10 seconds of that clip.
Yeah, and it didn't look good, but I take your description of the incident. I appreciate your call, Tom. We've got a little tape of that woman, MoveOn.org activist Lauren Valley, dragged on the ground. Well, you heard the description. Here she is in an interview with CBS talking about the tone of the election nationwide.
What happened to me is just a symptom of the agitation and the division that this country is experiencing on a mass scale, and I think that I experienced the physical violence, but violence is never the answer.
Jack, there's a 10-second video, and there's no doubt a minute and a minute and a half long video. You know, people sort of take their pick of what they want to look at, but the end of it did not look good. It's now in an ad that's being run in Kentucky only after 10 p.m. because the violence is so graphic here.
Oh, God.
But what do you make of that incident, Jack?
Well, you know, it is an incident. Center for American Progress ran a digest of these. There were about a half a dozen, you know, crowd, people being pushed, signs being broken, people being, arms being slapped. You know, it's pretty small stuff.
But are you saying everybody does it? I have to say, to me, that was an unusual sight. That, I mean, she had
No. That, yes, of course. That I mean, for heaven's sakes, a grown man putting his foot on a woman on the ground. I mean, you know.
On her head, or neck, on the curb.
And then he has the audacity, the cheek, to say she should apologize to me. I mean, I was really, I mean, good Lord. But my point is that given passions, I'm not, you know, I'm surprised there isn't more of this. I see there were some quotes from the Southern Poverty Law Center trying to blend this kind of thing into the general sort of recrudescence of, you know, extremist groups in the country and so on. I don't buy that. I really don't. I think that's going too far. There's always been a sort of rough barracking in American politics in rallies and things. I remember seeing things like that in the past. And so I don't want to make more of it than it should be.
Let's hope there's not too much of that kind of rough barracking. Head on curb from any party, anywhere, foot on top, not a good image to see. A lot of talk about money, union money in the race, anonymous money in the race. Here's here's AFL-CIO Chief Richard Trumka campaigning for Harry Reid, who's up against it. This is Trumka in Reno, Nevada on Tuesday.
So it's time, brothers and sisters. It's time to stand together. It's time to march together. It's time to knock on doors together. It's time to get out the vote together. It's time to win with Harry Reid, our champion.
So there's the union leader out championing Harry Reid, and a lot of union money out there, but a lot also of GOP money and anonymous money. Here's Karl Rove, no less, a former strategist for President George W. Bush on last Sunday, pushing back against the Democratic criticism of anonymous campaign donations.
I would like to have a different system, but we have the system we have. And if liberals do it, and nobody complains about it, it strikes me as somewhat hypocritical when conservatives begin to adopt their strategies and follow their models, and conservatives get criticized by the President of the United States by name. I appreciate it. He had helped our fundraising. In fact, anybody who still wants to contribute can go to our website and contribute. But the President of the United States had no problem at all when Democrats did this. In 2008, President Obama received the benefit of over $400 million of spending by outside groups on his behalf, most of whom did not report a single donor. And it was not a threat to democracy when it helped get him elected.
Candy Crowley, how do you see it? Turnabouts, fair play here, home stretch spending, overall spending in this election?
Listen, the fact that we've had this discussion sort of several times, you know, I'm doing stories on or doing it on the show, and the fact of the matter is that what's going on that we're talking about, I'm sure there's illegal things going on, but the kind of group that Karl Rove has is perfectly legal. And there is a note of sour grapes going on here, and with the Democrats. I mean, you know, should the law be changed? That is a wholly separate conversation. There is a lot of money coming into these. I mean, millions and millions. I think I saw $300 million from outside groups. And you don't know who the donors are for many of them. For some of them, you have to know because they're a different category. But yes, certainly there is a lot of money coming in. But the money they're talking about is legal. And I think it was sort of best summed up really in one question from Bob Schieffer, who had David Axelrod on 1 week. And they were talking about this outside money, and Axelrod was railing against it and these anonymous donors. And Schieffer looked at him and said, "Is that all you got?" Because in the end, the arguments that the Democrats have put out there have not seemed to work, if judging by the polling. And it was put out there as something to sort of say, hey, listen, all these people, these big corporations, all these big money people, they're coming to take the, you know, the country, and so you have to beware. Because a lot of what the Democrats wanted to put out there, health care had backfired on so many Democrats, the stimulus hasn't produced the jobs they wanted, just weren't working.
Janet Hook, how do you see it? I mean, on the other side of this election, the president himself pushed back in his State of the Union address on the Supreme Court's Citizens United ruling that made all this legal. But it is now wholly legal. Is this just the future, Janet? Or do you see discomfort on both sides of the aisle? Will Republicans, if there's a majority, just embrace the anonymous stuff and go with it? Or, you know, do we have to wait a generation for a different tone, a different law?
I don't know about another generation, but I don't think you can expect much to change in the next 2 years. If Republicans gain control of the House and have more control in the Senate, any legislation to change the system is not going to go anywhere. I mean, it was basically blocked by Republicans in this Congress when they had fewer votes. So I guess the only question is whether after the election the Democrats say, okay, well, I guess we got to get better at that game. And at this point, I think that I agree with Candy that it is sort of odd that this is the closing argument that the Democrats are making. I don't think they're making it in a way that will make it their position any stronger after the election.
Let's go to Mark in New Britain, Connecticut. Mark, you're on the air.
Yes, thanks, Tom. Let's talk about blocking things. Let's talk about blocking 480 bills that have passed the House in a 24/7. 365 filibuster. I want to know why nobody's talking about that, and I want to know how you can say Mitch McConnell is a traditional Republican leader when he has been the leader and orchestrator of this full court press and then turns around and says that the Democratic agenda has failed us, but it hasn't even been implemented.
Hey, Mark, I appreciate your call. Candy, you know, we're talking about what the effect of the Tea Party might be in changing the complexion. You know, our caller says, look, the complexion's changed already. You've had this no-to-everything kind of Republican posture. Mitch McConnell, we hear him this week saying that his number one job above everything else is to make sure President Obama is not reelected in 2012. That doesn't say much for reaching across the aisle.
No, it doesn't. And I suspect if the Republicans are seen as to blame for whatever is or is not passed, they'll get thrown out again should they get in the majority on Tuesday, but we're sort of an election ahead of ourselves. But having said that, I think what has really toasted the Democrats, particularly on the left side of the Democratic Party, is the fact of the matter is the Democrats control the House, the Democrats control the Senate, and the Democrats control the White House. And there are many in the Democratic Party saying, well, why didn't we get more of what we wanted? Who blame the president for caving? And I have to tell you that in many, many instances, it wasn't the Republicans all said no. They made a decision that they were going to block whatever it was that the president put up there. But in the end, the votes weren't there because the Democrats weren't there, because there were a handful of Democrats that agreed with the Republicans on some key issues. Public option is one of them on the Senate side. It was the Democrats that undid that.
So look in the mirror for Democrats there.
Sorry?
Look in the mirror a little bit for the Democrats. Sam in West Branch, Iowa. Sam, you're on the air.
Yeah. To me, the question here is that people voted for change. They wanted to go to work personally meaningful, financially rewarding, and culturally beneficial work. And there was no agenda set to solve our real problems. And people, I think, expected that, and they didn't get that. What they got was a health care bill that's an old it's subsidization of something, and we didn't address our energy problems. And frankly, you can put it at the White House. He sat around the table as chairman of a committee and smiled and said, what do you want to do? Or went to the Republicans' House caucus and assured them he was no ideologue, which to me was like George H.W. Bush saying, that idea thing, you know? We haven't had any leadership, and that's why I, as a Democrat, am upset. You know, isn't that they're upset against Washington because nothing's happened? Throw the bums out.
Sam, you got a clear, hard eye on it. I appreciate it. Jack, do you say to Sam?
Well, it's what the president said on Jon Stewart. He said, when Jon Stewart basically said nothing happened, he said nothing happened. You know, what we did, what this Congress did was historic. 30 million Americans are going to be insured under health care. And it's going to be done by lowering the deficit. One of the ironies of the Republicans' attack on the health care bill is that repealing it would increase the deficit. And he said we did systematic, root and branch financial reform, and we have a very very tough cop on the beat, and Elizabeth Warren, who's going to set up machinery that'll make sure, or try to make sure, it won't happen again. And he lifted a number of things that are major accomplishments. I mean, just leave out whether you agree with them or not. They're big.
So why is a dry-eyed Democrat like Sam in West Branch, Iowa, looking and saying, eh, don't see it?
Well, I think that this gets back to what our earlier caller called the zeitgeist, doesn't it? And behind the zeitgeist is just the brute facts of the economy. I mean, look, the recession got the Democrats in 2008. It lasted. Now it's pushing them out in 2010. And frankly, if this economy doesn't improve, and people like Ken Rogoff, the economist, say, you know, from this kind of recession, it takes 5 years. That would be 2013, 2014. If things don't get better, it'll wring them out again in 2012. I mean, this is economic retrospective voting. How did I do under this party? That is just the law of American politics, and it was brutal to the Republicans in 08, brutal to the Dems now, and unless things change, it'll be brutal for the president in 2012.
3 or 4 days, and we'll know. Just a few seconds. Janet Hook, are the Republicans measuring for the drapes there in the House Speaker's office?
They would never say so, but that's surely what they're expecting.
Candy Crowley, anything going to happen in the next couple of years if it turns out as we're hearing this hour?
I think if it doesn't, that both sides can look for more defeats of incumbents when we go into 20. I think one of the callers hit right on it, which is people want something done.
And clearly, we need something done. Candy Crowley, chief political correspondent at CNN, host of CNN's State of the Union. It's always great to have you. Candy, thank you very, very much for being here today.
Thanks.
And Janet Hook, political reporter with the Wall Street Journal. Janet, thanks so much for your time and thoughts.
Sure, Tom.
Jack Beatty, we will see in a jiffy. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. ¶¶